going on? This is Doki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye, and on the line I have the great basketball historian. No one knows more about the game than the great Tim Gallagher. Tim, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Fred. Happy New Year. 2018 is here, and a lot to talk about with the Bulls and draft prospects and the league in general.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to talk to you. A lot to talk about. We're going to get into Trae Young and his skyrocketing draft status shortly, but let's get a little bit of your viewpoint now. The Beloved have lost three in a row. Things are starting to turn around again towards the tank. Competitive in all these games against some good teams. Obviously, the Raptors are really good, and I think a little bit different Raptors team than we're used to. I think they're a little bit better than they have been in the past. So why don't we get your little bit of 411 and your opinion on the team over this three-game losing streak, and you know where you think we're going moving forward?
Right. Well, it certainly has been a bit of a roller coaster ride, and the return of Nico and the win streak was really surprising in a positive way, and the development of the young players, and we'll kind of talk a little bit more about specific players here in a second. But I mean, my vision for the season was to be competitive in these games and maybe come up a little short at the end. And like these last few games have gone, we got teased a little bit with the win streak and how well they're playing, but to see them compete and play well on the road in Cleveland, you mentioned the game against Toronto, very, very good teams. And not just the final outcome, but just the mindset and the look in the eyes of the Bulls players is they're out there to win, and they're not, it's not over their heads competing against these teams in these circumstances, which is, I think, a little beyond what we were expecting this soon for young players like Markkanen and Chris Dunn and a few of the others. So it may have been a little fool's gold with the streak, but I think it gave us some hope for the future, and I don't know how dramatic the rebuild may have to be. I know you've talked about that a lot in terms of, you know, a piece here or there and a higher draft pick, which it may not be a top five pick now based on the wins that have come recently, and the return of LaVine is only going to help. It's a little bit of a head scratcher, just in the sense that the spark of how well they played and how exciting the Bulls team performed on the floor with some of these young guys is really encouraging. But then again, this isn't a team that's going to get to the conference finals or get to the finals, and we want to get one of those elite players in the draft. So it's still kind of in that balance of I don't want them to win too much, but I had said before, let's win a few of these games here and there to keep the motivation up, keep the momentum in a positive way in the player development, and I think that's been accomplished. What do you think?
Yeah, I think things that, you know, are still going good. We've been competitive in these games, and yesterday we were right there in the fourth quarter until Toronto blew us out. I think things are still going in the right direction. I still think the team is really good, is going to be very competitive when LaVine comes back, and too good to finish in the bottom five. But, you know, after losing these three in a row, I've kind of come around to me, it's kind of like everybody's asking, well, you're all over the place. First you want to flop, first you want to go to the playoffs. Yeah, how do they say it? Adjusting to conditions on the ground, right? We've lost three in a row, and we're not that far from the bottom still. And there are some potentially franchise-changing players in this upcoming draft. You know, let's trade Nico. Let's trade some of these guys. And I think that's what the Bulls are going to do, by the way. But, you know, let's trade these guys. Let's go and embrace the tank and go for it and make sure we get, you know, as close as possible to five. I think we'll get a good player at five, and I think we'll get a good player at 10, right? It's just, is it going to be a franchise changer? If we really have a legit opportunity of getting an Ayton or, you know, or Doncic or a, you know, now look at this young kid, let's go for it. Let's get in position to do that and put ourselves in the best possible position. Hopefully also return some assets in exchange for Nico. I'm starting to think Nico might be able to draw a little bit more than expected. There's a lot of teams that could potentially use him. Have you thought about that at all? Like, you know, what teams could potentially use Nico Mirotic? I threw out the Lakers and the fact that they're the worst shooting three-point team in basketball, and they really have no incentive at all to tank. And Nico's contract, you can also, you know, basically let him walk, and you would then, you know, have an expiring there, or just pick up the team option and have a good player for next year. What do you think?
I could see that, and playing with somebody like Lonzo Ball, who gets his teammates the ball in great shooting position. I mean, Kuzma's played well even without Ball on the floor at times, but I've seen enough of Ball play that that he just makes the game so easy for someone with some talent like a Kyle Kuzma, who's been arguably the surprise of the draft. There's been a couple rookies that have looked really good, but he's the one that drafted late. So, yeah, to add another shooter to the arsenal like Nico would make a lot of sense, or even a team that's kind of on the cusp of maybe getting into the playoffs or getting a higher seed. And I haven't checked it all out with salary cap and things like that, but I'm, you know, in the West, for example, a team like maybe the Clippers or Pelicans or Blazers that are kind of right on, you know, on that, you know, somewhere between the, you know, the 6 to 9 spot that could use someone like Nico to add some offensive punch. So his market value is probably never going to be higher. And the way he's played, his statistics still are, I'm having to do a double take when I look at the stats in terms of his shooting percentage, his rebounding, just everything. It's incredible.
It really is. I mean, he's close to 50% from three, which is absolutely insane to me. If he was anywhere near those numbers last year, I think we would have won 50 games. I mean, that was our biggest issue, is having a guy to hit the three, and he failed miserably for his first 200 shots, you know, hovering around 30%. He's the exact opposite this year. I mean, words can't describe what a difference he's been at the three-point line. And I guess, and I think you've mentioned this before, but I just want to get it on record now that it's been a while since we talked. You're, even though he's only 26, you're in favor of trading Nico?
Yes, because I think there's enough pieces. You know, if you look at Markkanen and the development of Dunn recently, Valentine's improved. Now, I don't think Valentine's going to be a star, but I think he's going to be at worst a solid rotation guy and a kind of a facilitator, I guess you'd say.
Yes.
Just he's a guy that I just feel better when he's on the floor. Things just go better when he's out there. Yep. And even and his statistics are a little deceptive. In fact, you know, overall looking at the roster, and I'd say if you look at the guys in the rotation for the Bulls, I'd say other than Zipser, everyone has kind of outperformed my expectations for what I saw this season as an individual on an individual basis. And you look at, I mean, Denzel's just under 10 points a game. And if he, you know, averaged another, you know, half point a game or so more, they'd have 7 players in double figures. So I think this is more the offensive distribution and punch that Hoiberg had probably had in mind.
Yeah.
And who would have thought that watching this year's Bulls team would be much more enjoyable and exciting than watching the team with Jimmy, Wade, Rondo. I mean, it's hard to think of it in that way, but it's really true. I mean, this team is really refreshing to watch and exciting, and really there haven't been any stinkers lately, and obviously the win streak. But even aside from Nico playing out of his mind, the development of Dunn, how Portis has played, Holiday's been playing better lately. Lopez is just a solid rock in the middle. So it's been surprisingly fun watching this group develop.
No, I agree 100%. It is unexpected to see a team relatively enjoyable to watch for the most part, especially in the last few weeks as they've won on that 10 out of 12 winning streak. And it's just shocking in a way, too. And I agree with you totally, too. Like, I had this conversation, I can't remember who I was speaking with about this, but when you went through the rebuild under Jerry Krause post-Jordan, what a disaster that was. You'd look at the roster, and I remember talking to my friends saying, this guy doesn't belong in the NBA, this guy doesn't belong in the NBA. You know, literally going through probably half the roster saying, these guys in 2 years won't be in the NBA. looking at this Bulls current roster, you know, maybe Zipser. I think there's a couple guys. Maybe Zipser's the only guy who I'd probably say is, you know, I could see him 2 years being out of the league. I think everyone else on the roster, for the most part, is going to have a spot in the league. Felicio is another guy too, who's questionable. I mean, he's on a 4-year deal, but you know,
right?
He could be in the G League, right? But everybody else, I mean, there's going to be a spot for, for Valentine. There's going to be a spot for, you know, for Holiday. You know what I mean? Don't you think?
Right.
Looking up and down the roster, these are NBA players that will be here for several years. Even Grant, who I think is, since he's gone to the backup guard point guard position, he's played much better.
Right, I agree. And his shooting percentage is just about 44% from overall, which is improved. And you're right, he's played better. And, yeah, I agree with you on all of that. You know, I've not followed it quite as much in terms of Poindexter. Is his situation just, is it health or just not playing well? Because I always thought he was a pretty serviceable player when healthy. Thinking him playing earlier in his career with Memphis and New Orleans.
Yeah, I think he's lost a considerable step due to the injuries of the past. And, yeah, he's another guy. I'm going to wonder whether or not he'll be in the league in 2 years. But seems like a good guy. Seems like a good vet to have on the team. You need guys like that, you know, who are almost out of the league but have had somewhat of a long career, who can help these young guys kind of transition. You know, as they learn the game and learn not just on the court but off the court. So, you know, a guy like that's valuable. But it sounds like you and I are both in agreement here. Hey, now, you know, now that they lost three in a row, conditions on the ground have changed. Let's embrace the tank. And, you know, we're still right there, right? I mean, look, I think the worst team in the league, the Lakers are right there. I don't have it in front of me. Is it who's the worst team?
Atlanta, Orlando. Well, Atlanta's got 10 wins, the Lakers 11. Orlando and Memphis and Sacramento 12. So Bulls are currently right about in line with the Suns and Dallas.
Yeah.
New Jersey and Charlotte are kind of right in that mix as well.
Yeah.
So those are going to be the teams they're going to contend with. And, you know, and when you think about the Bulls in their process of what they're doing, transitioning to this young roster and building for the future. You think of some of these other teams we just mentioned, that like Sacramento, Orlando, Phoenix, Charlotte. I mean, there's been some flickers at Brooklyn. There's been a few flickers here and there, but you know, they've pretty much had sustained mediocrity. Where the Bulls, I think, have shown more signs of life already. You know, in just 1 year, and what was supposed to be a disastrous tanking year.
I agree 100%. Yeah. Well,
I think that reflects on the Bulls management, which I know gets a lot of criticism, but when you see the development of these young players, you know, I have to admit I was a little bit skeptical on Dunn, but I've seen enough now that okay, this is a guy that you could build around. You know, his steals, some of the still not as consistent as I'd like, but he's still a young guy in the league and really this is the first significant minutes he's playing. And I'm starting to see what the Bulls front office saw in him in terms of wanting him when he was coming out of Providence and then the desire to acquire him in the Butler trade.
No, I agree 100%. Out of all those teams that you mentioned there, I think the Bulls are in as good a shape, if not in definitely better than most of them and possibly better than all of them as far as moving forward. You know, we got pieces here that are, I think, could take us from where we are now, going to be a lottery team to a contender in a very short period of time. So I think the future is bright, and we should act as such. I want to talk a little bit about Trae Young, who's now one of the big prospects who a lot of these teams are going to be vying for, who's kind of catapulted himself to the top of the list here for potential draft picks. You know, I looking at him, first of all, I know there's a lot of questions. He's a point guard, right? And I feel he could easily be the point guard and have Dunn slip it over to the two. I think they complement each other great. Dunn's a much better defender, can take on that tough defensive assignment. He could guard twos all over this league. And then I think that Young could almost be off guard, you know, similar to how Gordon and Heinrich worked together back in the day. But I'd love to get your opinion on Trae Young and how you feel his game will translate to the NBA I had some questions on his size. Like, he is a small guy, right? Smaller than Curry, lighter than Curry. And you know, in today's game, he couldn't have lasted in the 80s, but the way the game is called today, he probably definitely has a good career ahead of him. What do you think?
Right. Well, and I was aware of him. He played in the one of the high school All-Star games out here in Southern California, where I've seen a lot of elite players come through. But being from Norman, Oklahoma, you know, he was a McDonald's All-American, so it wasn't like he was totally off the radar. But Norman, Oklahoma traditionally hasn't been a powerhouse in producing prospects, and he stayed close to home, obviously, to play for the Sooners there. And I did check, and he averaged 42 a game as a senior in high school.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
So he's obviously able to fill it up. And you've heard the comparisons to Curry, and a lot of times you'd be skeptical on hearing something like that. But you see him play, see highlights of him, the shooting range, and then the ability to pass the ball is what's unique about him compared to many other prospects and point guards. And I haven't looked at the stats in the last day or two, but for very recently, he was leading the nation in scoring and assists, which is very unique for any player. And so those are the type of skills that Curry obviously brings to the table. I also checked, and his dad played at Texas Tech and played overseas, so there's a little bit of family heritage with him. And just watching him, the game just seems to come easy for him. It just doesn't look like he's exerting himself to score the ball. And this court vision is incredible. And again, not many guys have come along that see the floor like him. And obviously he's backing it up by leading the nation in assists. But those numbers, it's the way he does it. He's making passes with kind of like Curry, with a little flair that are productive, but also with a little sparkle to them. And so he seems to have that kind of magic.
Where do you see him getting picked? I mean, where do you think he's going to go, and where would you think a good spot for him would be?
Right. Well, if you look at the draft board, if the season ended today and then things shook out the way they did, I would think it would have to be a team that needs a point guard. And you know, Atlanta, I don't know how much they're committed to Dennis Schroeder, but it looks like Schroeder is someone that they've kind of invested their future in. Dallas obviously has Dennis Smith, and you think maybe they'd go big. Orlando, Elfrid Payton, I'm not a big Elfrid Payton guy. That's who's run the point for them the last few years. So this mock draft I'm looking at here has him going third to Orlando, which, boy, if you're passionate on Doncic and Michael Porter Jr., you know, you got to be pretty darn good. So
yeah.
I think with a point guard situation, you're going to have to go to a team that really needs to fill that spot as much as maybe the best available player. But he's certainly moved his way up to the top handful of guys in the draft.
Would you still take your – I know you've been a Michael Porter Jr. guy. Would you still take him ahead of him?
You know, assuming Porter's going to come back from his back surgery, and all indications appear that he will, Yeah, he's still arguably my favorite in the draft in terms of overall skill set. I mean, Ayton and Bagley have obviously proven they're worthy of being the number one pick. I've only seen Doncic on highlights, not really a full flow of a game. I still think Bamba's a little bit work in progress. I see in this mock draft, Jaren Jackson moved his way ahead of Miles Bridges. I'm still a big Miles Bridges guy, too. And, you know, he may be someone that is available around the slot the Bulls may end up if they're not in that top handful of picks.
Miles Bridges would fit perfectly in with this team as currently constructed. He's exactly what they would need, you know.
Right, and obviously there's a little history with Denzel Valentine being a Michigan State guy. Sean Refsberg, who's doing player development for the Bulls, is a Michigan State guy, an Izzo guy. So there's a little bit of connection with Michigan State as well. And Jaren Jackson certainly would be a name that would come up as well. I think he's more of a four or five probably in today's game, where I see Bridges as maybe a 2-3-4.
Absolutely.
And a little more versatile and a little more explosive. And
yeah, Bridges is a wing. Jaren Jackson is a big, you know.
Right.
I'm kind of shocked that he's passed up Bridges. I guess I need to watch a little bit more Michigan State, but, you know, just from what I've seen on their career so far, I mean, Bridges is just so athletically superior. The guy's an absolute freak athletically, and the potential just oozes out of the kid. The kid's incredible, you know, as far as potential
right.
goes.
Right, yeah, I'm a big fan of his, and, yeah, that would be an excellent pick if the Bulls could get Bridges. I don't know why he slipped a little bit. I know he's had some injury issues, and, you know, it could be one of those things, too, where if he would have come out last year, you know, he probably would have maybe even gone higher, but, you know, now they're kind of picking apart his game for staying in school. I know that was a big story as the college season started in terms of his desire to continue on in college. He was disappointed with the way Michigan State ended last year. He realized he needed more development. So I see it all as a positive, and if the Bulls could get him wherever they pick, other than maybe the top three or four, which, again, we're talking Ayton, Bagley, Doncic, Porter Jr., if they got Bridges, other than one of those guys, I'd be very happy with it.
Great. A little bit about Marcus Howard's record-setting night last night for Marquette against Providence. Could you tell us a little bit about Marcus Howard? Is he going to be in the upper echelon of the NBA draft?
Well, he's not really even on the mock draft lists that I'm looking at now, even though he's had a solid freshman year at Marquette, and last night had one of those breakout games. He broke the Marquette scoring record. He scored 52 points on the road at Providence, and it was a Trae Young-like performance, I would say, which is a comparison you can make now that Trae Young's burst onto the national scene. But if you get a chance, look at the highlights of Marcus Howard scoring from all over in all different types of ways. Kind of a Curry-like performance as well. Although, I'm not sure if this has catapulted him even into the first round, but certainly he's gotten on the radar of a lot of scouts now after the performance last night on the road. And just one of those kids, too, that seems to have a certain demeanor and competitiveness, and, you know, the moment's not too big for him. And mixed it up with hitting threes and runners and left-handed layups in traffic after taking a hit. And so just seeing all the things he put together, just based on last night's game, there's a place for him in the league.
No doubt. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the 50th anniversary of the greatest game ever played in Dick Enberg's passing. If you could share with us a little bit about that game specifically, for those who don't know what it is, I think a large percentage of the audience might not know what the greatest college basketball game ever played is, and Dick Enberg, your thoughts on him and his passing.
Sure. Well, and it's coincidental that it's coming up on the 50th anniversary of what they called the game of the century, which was, with all the games on television now and how big the Final Four has become and that it's played in domed stadiums instead of traditional basketball arenas, it probably seems not as significant. But if you go back 50 years ago, there was a very famous game played January 20th, 1968 in the Astrodome, which was known as the Eighth Wonder of the World. And UCLA, who was the defending NCAA champs, undefeated with Lew Alcindor, who became known as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, played the Houston Cougars with Elvin Hayes, who's also a Hall of Famer, had a great NBA career, was a championship player on the Washington Bullets. So that was the first nationally televised college basketball game, believe it or not. And so kind of a made-for-TV event. And it kind of really brought college basketball to the national spotlight. And Dick Enberg was the play-by-play announcer for that game and really brought him to the attention of the national sports fans 50 years ago. So it's kind of an interesting bookend. And sadly, he passed away just before Christmas. But here we are almost 50 years to the day of that famous game. So his time in the national spotlight was 50 years and kind of bookended by the UCLA Houston game in the Astrodome, and here 50 years later, the anniversary of it. So, but yeah, Dick Enberg was a San Diego resident. So I actually ran across him from time to time, and a true gentleman, and obviously covered the NBA. I think of him more in the early days of some of those college basketball telecasts. And initially, they were syndicated college games. I did a little research on it because of the 50th anniversary of the UCLA-Houston game, which incidentally, Houston beat UCLA by 2 points, and which was considered a pretty dramatic upset, even though Houston was a very good team and ended up meeting UCLA later in the Final Four, and UCLA dismantled them, actually, in the revenge game. But for that one moment, that one night, and you know, it was a cover of Sports Illustrated with Elvin Hayes shooting a jumper over Lou Alcindor in that win. The other interesting thing, if you go in and look at pictures and so forth, they put the court in the middle of the arena, and there was no seating on the floor. So the fans were, you know, basically, you know, hundreds of yards away from the actual action. So it was a weird setup. And obviously later when they started playing Final Fours in the dome stadiums, they figured out a seating configuration where people could get closer to the floor. So it was quite a spectacle and really more of a made for TV event, even though I think there were, you know, 40, 50,000 people on hand to see the game in person. So, so that was a key element of Dick Enberg's emergence into the national scene as a basketball broadcaster. And, the other couple quick stories I'll share with Dick Enberg is he was a broadcast partner with the legendary coach Al McGuire, who coached at Marquette for many years, won an NCAA championship in 77 at Marquette. And where Dick Enberg was a kind of a conservative Midwestern guy, Al McGuire was a quirky, street smart New Yorker, and they were an interesting broadcast team, and Billy Packer was also part of that team. But Al McGuire was such a character that years later, Dick Enberg ended up writing a one-man show, a one-man play called McGuire, where there's a actor that portrays Al McGuire. And I saw the show a few times over the years in San Diego, and just an incredible portrayal of Al McGuire's life. And Dick Enberg was the writer for that. So not only talent as a broadcaster, but that he could put a production together like that was quite impressive. One other little tidbit on the Houston-UCLA game in the Astrodome is the person that was kind of behind creating these syndicated college basketball games for television was Eddie Einhorn. Do you know that name, Fred? From,
absolutely.
From the, owner, from the White Sox.
He's co-owner of the White Sox, exactly, who he's kind of become gone to the background. I think he still owns a part of the team, but he's definitely not where he used to be in local Chicago sports. But in the 80s, it was Einhorn and Reinsdorf, and now it's some Reinsdorf primarily associated as being the primary owner.
Right. And Einhorn has recently, he passed away, I think, a year or two ago. But you're right, he was a minority
owner.
Eddie
Einhorn died? I did not know that. Wow, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, it was fairly recently. But he was the person behind syndicating college basketball games and was the person behind that UCLA-Houston game in the Astrodome and the first national telecast. Before that, it was more syndicated college games where stations around the country might pick it up or they might not. Well, it wasn't like it is today. But Dick Enberg was one of the early play-by-play guys for Eddie Einhorn and all those broadcasts. He typically had Hot Rod Hundley as his color commentator for a lot of the games. But another little bit of trivia for that UCLA-Houston game in the Astrodome, though, Dick Enberg's broadcast partner was Bob Pettit, who's a basketball Hall of Famer, played for the Hawks, kind of the Larry Bird of his era, you know, from the kind of the mid-50s to the mid-60s as a player. But anyway, Dick Enberg was a true gentleman, class act, and a key figure in basketball history on a number of levels.
Great. Thanks for sharing with us. I did not know that Dick actually wrote that play. I wanted to see that play. I heard great stuff about it. Yeah, he seemed like a real true gentleman. And he did do the play-by-play for anyone who wants to go on YouTube and watch it. To me, one of the greatest college basketball games ever was Illinois' comeback overtime win against Arizona in the 2004 NCAA tournament. I can't recommend you going to watch that and watching that enough, and especially the last 3 minutes. Just incredible excitement, and Dick Enberg was a play-by-play man on that game. So please go check that out and for some really good Dick Enberg memories. He seemed like a class act and just a great guy, and he will be missed.
Right. Well, one last quick Dick Enberg story is I do owe him a thanks for having some of the best seats I've ever had at a Final Four in 2001. So I happened to be there anyway, which was in Minneapolis, and it was the NCAA Finals, which was Duke against Arizona. So a Duke team with Boozer, Jason Williams, Dunleavy Jr., Arizona had Gilbert Arenas, Richard Jefferson, Luke Walton was a player on that team. Anyway, I was at the Final Four already, and one of my San Diego friends teaches at the school where Dick Enberg's kids, who are now grown, but as a teacher at the school where they attended at the time, and kind of word got around that Dick Enberg may have access to a few extra tickets, but it would be last minute. So we kind of hung around by the entrance to the arena, and I remember Grant Hill was on the Orlando Magic then and injured. That's when he missed quite a bit of time and was walking up to the arena, or he got dropped off right by the arena in a kind of like a cast and crutches and making his way in. And through my buddy, we found out last minute that there were some seats that had freed up last minute, compliments of Dick Enberg. And so I ended up sitting with my brother-in-law just several rows behind the basket courtside in the Metrodome, which was one of the more incredible experiences.
Wow.
And have Dick Enberg to thank for one of those wonderful basketball memories.
Really cool. Tim, thanks again for jumping on the Bullseye. Great stuff as usual. Really love talking to you, and that's some good, great stories about the great Dick Enberg. All the best to you, brother. Looking forward to touching base again in a week or so, and hopefully by then the beloved Bulls will have a lot of competitive L's and be going closer to that top five area where we want to be. All right,
Tim. All right. Well, Happy New Year, Fred. Always great to talk basketball with you.
Happy New Year to you, Tim. Always great to talk to you, and looking forward to having you on throughout 2018. All the best to you, brother. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.